Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 72 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emelson, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And today, in honor of the extended lull that we're having between content patches, we are going to be talking about games that are not named World of Warcraft. But before we talk about those, we have some stuff that happened this week.
We do, yeah. So, well, I guess if we stay in the World of Warcraft just a little bit, how was, we do our little normal, like, how was your raid this week? Do you have a good one, bad one?
Interesting. Maybe? So interesting. I'm going to be out of town next week, which, spoiler, that means there's no podcast next week.
Yeah.
But that also means that I won't be tanking for my guild next week. So we were going to have somebody else come in and tank and have them, you know, do a warm up basically while I'm still around to help out if is needed.
Yeah.
They got sick on Friday.
Oh no.
So we, instead of doing our normal like shriek sludge SLG Denny,
yeah,
and then reclear the rest, we recleared everything except for Stone Legion generals and Denny on Friday. And I'm waiting to hear back from them as to whether I am going to be tanking tonight or not, but I might be tanking tonight.
Oh God, I hope they feel better. That sucks. That's crazy though.
Yeah, they were in Discord for a little bit yesterday, and they sounded miserable. So yeah,
being stuck in the summertime, yeah, being sick is just awful. Ugh, that's rough. Yeah, no, and our raid was, I think I did the first two, and then I was out. So, like, our paladin last week, or one of the healers, I guess he's a paladin, was out last week. So, like, I just sat for, like, the final two, because we do the speed strat on Stone Legion, so it's four healers. And then, like, I had already killed Sire last week, so I don't need anything, so I just sit. So it was a quick week for me. It was, like, two easy bosses, basically.
Yeah, we originally had me in for only, like, five bosses this week.
Coming nice.
And I am our only monk, so it was going to be no monk debuff on a bunch of bosses. But that would be the first time I've actually sat on a boss since Ilganoth.
Oh, wow.
Which was also on Ilganoth. Again, I was out of town. So yeah. I sat a night on Ilganoth because I was literally not at a computer.
Nice, nice, nice. Awesome, awesome. Well, cool. Well, yeah, I guess there's a handful of things that I think happened last week. From old Blizzard, or at least in World of Warcraft. So the first one was just Blizzard clarified. They sent out a sort of a blue post and clarified the wording around flying in Shadowlands. So you're not going to need to purchase it. There was, I guess, a wording in one of the blog posts around like to purchase Shadowlands flying or whatever, and people got all up in arms, like, I have to spend like 5,000 gold of my 8 million to buy flying. Oh man, that stinks. So they clarified. You just get it. Like, you get enabled through the quest or whatever.
Yeah. Apparently the intent was that you have to have already purchased flying. Like, you have to have purchased flying for the rest of the game.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
But there's no extra purchase beyond that. And I don't know why they worded it like that, because I don't actually know anyone that hasn't purchased flying. Like, if you're level 60, you already have flying, because for at least 20 levels of the 30 of the 1 to 50 experience, you can fly.
Yeah. They do the breadcrumb quest to your flight trainer anyway, right? To your mount trainer.
Yeah.
It's almost like they have, this is gonna sound really rude, but it's like they have some like brand new person writing blog posts for them that's just like, oh yeah. Got to remind the people that they got to purchase flying 20 years ago. So that's kind of
rude. I mean, I understand a little bit, because like, I wouldn't want to be the guy that like left out the fact that you have to purchase flying and then have like someone cause a fuss over it. But this just seems like the way worse option. Yeah.
So again, don't have to purchase flying. You just get it when you complete. I think it's like the second or third campaign quest, right? So you get it, I think, like week two after launch or something like that. So fairly early, then you get to fly. It'll be fun. The other thing that happened this week, sort of around PTR and beta, was they've added two new potency conduits. Basically, look like one or sorry, not two new potencies. They added two new conduits. One's a potency, one's an endurance. But the new potency conduit basically states that when you're healed by another player, you increase your primary stats by 60 for 15 seconds. And this can only occur every 30 seconds. So basically it's a, you know, a average of what, 30 stats increase, but you'll get
it. That's for item level 145 as well.
Right.
So for a 226, which would be the like current patch version, it's 120.
Solid.
And then for what looks like the mythic version for next patch, it will be 150. So an average of 75 extra primary stat for equipping this conduit.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is interesting. Basically, I think it's actually marked as a tank conduit.
Yeah. So I think we talked about previously when we were talking about the extended soulbind trees that tanks only get two potency conduits.
Right.
So with the extended soulbind trees, if we went a route that had three potency slots, we literally couldn't fill them. Actually, maybe we have three. I don't know. We have one fewer than regular DPS.
Yeah.
Or actually also healers. So this is, so we have three. That's what it is. We have three. So if we went a route that had three, we'd have zero choice. We just have to equip all three of them. This gives us a fourth one. It's an extremely boring fourth one. It has to work for all four tanks or all six tank specs. It's very dull. I don't like it, but numerically it is good.
Yeah.
In fact, numerically it is so good that there are some DPS specs of classes that have tank specs. Now they're talking about using it because in raid, you're going to be getting healed by another player constantly. Like healing rain, efflorescence, rejuve, renewing mist, like all these stuff going to be flying around. You're going to get healed by another player constantly, even if you're not a tank. So that this throws a wrench in things because only specs that have or only classes that have a tank spec can even get it.
Can acquire
which means that it's a global one. Yet one that only applies to six classes.
Yeah.
So DPS specs for six classes can get it. And whether they actually use it really depends on how good their other potency conduits are. There are a lot of specs in the game with really bad potency conduits. Like Brewmaster kind of has one potency conduit for the spec. It's got the Invoke Niazal one. The other potency conduits are not good. And then there's the Covenant one, which some of the Covenant ones are good. Like the Necrolord one is very good. Mm-hmm. The Kyrian one is very good. Well, I don't know if I'd say very good, but it's good. whereas like the Night Fae one is like extremely good on AoE, but garbage on single target. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I wish that they would have actually just I don't know if I want to wish yet more work on them, honestly, but I wish that if they were going to give us another conduit, that it would have actually been like the Invoke Niazal one. That's very interesting and changes how the spec plays. Right. But at the same time, I'll take this. It's numerically good. It's better than our other potency conduit. So this, if you do go a route that has three potency conduits right now, you're going to be using Invoke Niazal, this one, and your Covenant one.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I'd have to look at, I mean, if it's labeled as tank only, meaning tanks can acquire it, but I could still use it as a healer, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, it would probably be very good for healers just in general that could do this. So.
So this might be the first time that I can remember since Legion that non-tanks have used a tank item in PvE. The last time I can remember was in the MDI and in very high keys, DPS using the Aggramar trinket, the tank trinket with the giant shield in order to survive one-shot mechanics.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be fun to see how this changes. Depending on how good it ends up being for a bunch of different classes and how much other classes complain, particularly like your pure DPS classes and like rogues, hunters, you know, shadow priests. Well, not pure DPS, but classes without a tank spec, right? We'll see what they do. Yeah. And the other conduit they added, slightly less interesting, but it's an endurance conduit, which basically states, you know, anytime you take damage at a base level, you heal for, I guess it's 2.5% of your maximum HP, and this can occur every 10 seconds, once every 10 seconds. So basically it's a, you know, 2-3% heal every 10 seconds as you take damage. Which again, probably adds up, you know, over the course of a fight, this is a large amount of healing. It's a little bit, it's going to probably be interesting to see how it plays out when it actually gets played, if it gets played, right? Because you'll have some fights where you'll take ticking damage that might proc this. There's a bunch of overhealing, right? I'm assuming what ends up happening is no matter what the damage you take, it automatically heals for that percentage, depending on your item level, the conduit.
Yeah.
So if you take like small tick of something, maybe you waste that proc, you have some overhealing associated to it. But I think in the large, like the grand scheme of things, this procking every 10 seconds and the fact that it's anytime you take damage, so you will somewhat need the healing regardless. Seems like a very good endurance conduit.
Yeah, this is actually one of the best endurance conduits, broadly speaking, that's in the game right now. And it varies a lot in how much HP that your class and spec has. Like the 252 version of this conduit, which is the highest eye level you can get, is 4.5% of your max HP every 10 seconds. And so if you're like a blood DK and you've got 100,000 health, then, you know, that's a pretty sizable heal.
Yeah.
If you're a brewmaster and you've got 70,000 health, it's worse, but it's still better than most of our endurance conduits. As a tank, it is better than, well, brewmaster again, kind of has two endurance conduits. One of them secretly a potency conduit and the other one's actually an endurance conduit. So this gives us a second endurance conduit, basically.
Yeah. And I think even for like what we get as monks, right? Like across the board, like there's not much that healers get in the endurance space. It's like there's one that's like more spell harm healing, and like there's a shield when you use Fort Brew. So
that's the harm denial one is the one that's secretly a potency conduit for us because it's actually better than some, well, it's not better than our under potency conduits, but it doesn't take a potency conduit slot, which makes it free compared to the potency ones.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I mean, I think this one ends up, it'll probably end up being played regardless just because the rest of the endurance ones are just so weak. So.
Yeah. Most specs have, I feel like there's a lot of specs that have like one very good mislabeled utility conduit, like a finesse conduit that's actually an endurance conduit. Something like the AMZ conduit for Death Knight, I believe is endurance.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to still use those because those are extremely good. Well, maybe not the AMZ one anymore, but you know, there's a bunch of them like that. I think hunters have one for Feign Death and things like that. But there's also a bunch of specs that just have garbage endurance conduits. And so one thing that I actually think is very interesting about this is when you have an extra, like very compelling endurance conduit, that opens up some of the, you know, soulbind builds that don't have maximal potency conduits.
Right.
And I wouldn't say that this really gets there for a lot of DPS. But something like Nia having Burrs locked behind not running an extra potency conduit makes this, you know, better.
Yeah. And I think even, I mean, to be fair, for at least for Mistweaver, right, like the actual conduits themselves are almost less important than like the powers on the Soulbind tree in a lot of cases. So like, to be fair, we might get lucky and be able to use this, but I think this just becomes your default. If you have a endurance, you know, slot, you have it, you'll use this one. And then beyond that, it's like probably the Fort Brew one, just because Expel Harm is so rarely used for us. It's just like, it's a waste. Yeah. So
I don't actually, despite on the guide, the Harm Denial is listed pretty highly because it does do damage for Brewmasters because Expel Harm is an ability that we press. It is worth pressing for damage when you've got two Gifts of the Ox Orbs instead of pressing Tiger Palm. So we do press Expel Harm. So that makes Harm Denial actually a DPS game.
Yeah.
That's funny. But I actually usually run the Fort Brew one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've always run the 4-brew one just because it's so much nicer, particularly when like the shield plus the reduction. So so cool. So yeah, so that's sort of the two new conduits. They seem pretty good. If I mean, kind of boring, but still powerful, which I think is
fun. Yeah, the potency conduit's a lot better than the endurance one for most specs.
Yeah.
But the endurance one is fine.
Yeah, it's a nice defensive bonus. So so yeah, so that is sort of the week in review. There's not too much, and I guess this other stuff could probably be considered week in review stuff. I put it under like main topics, but the next up is Blizzard did do a quick tuning pass on all the Mythic Plus anima affixes, and they made a couple of interesting changes. So you know, we got our first look at all of the anima powers last week, got a week's worth of testing, so we should expect to see changes pretty much every week now on this type of stuff. The big change though, or not the big change, but the major change is a lot of the anima powers were changed to scale now on player level or player gear, player power
instead of key level.
So that sort of ends up being probably a better change. You don't run into situations. I think the WoWhead article mentions like the plague bearers, right? Like you don't get into those situations where like you need a power to complete the key, or the power just sort of overruns and is the reason you complete the key, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you have very, very powerful effects that proc from just casting abilities, it can really warp things, especially for specs that may not have something that they can spam very easily.
Mm-hmm.
So for Brewmaster as an example, in late BFA, you could get blue parses by only casting Tiger Palm. And Tiger Palm, for reference, it was about 5% of your damage, but because it was a cast, it triggered all of your Twilight devs and your Heart of Azeroth effects and all the other procs that you had. You could get a blue parse just by pressing Tiger Palm repeatedly. Like, you could take everything else off of your bars and press Tiger Palm and you would blue parse. And so that kind of thing where, like, if the procs become so powerful on their own that it just rewards pushing anything, that can be, I mean, that's just bad. Also, because they were scaling with key level, this does mean that they would be reaching the point that they just completely dwarfed player power.
Yeah. And where they basically key, right? They sort of just, were the reason you did it. So, from a scaling perspective, good change. They also did a pass and basically changed a bunch of other things with each of these anima powers, right? Like, I think the big one that, well, caring about healers mostly, the loose mana, or I guess it's called overflowing chalice anima power, where that was one where if you healed, it generated an orb, and that orb provided you with 10% mana if you ran over and touched it. They've changed the wording and also added a procs per minute to it. So they changed the wording, and basically, instead of saying your healing spells have a chance to generate loose mana, it now reads healing a target has a chance to generate loose mana. Which basically you can infer that now it only will proc off of casts versus any healing events.
Right. Previous. And no more renewing mists procking.
Yeah.
A bunch of them for you.
Yeah. And then they also added a procs per minute. Previously there was none, and now it's set to 4. So essentially you can consider you get 4 every minute, about 40% mana every minute, which is still a solid change. Like, it's not unlimited mana where it was before, but 40% mana every minute is a lot of
mana.
Yeah, it's a lot of mana in Mythic Plus. So so power change there. And they've changed sort of a bunch of other things like throughout it. Like, some of these end up being a little bit different. Like the one where if you were above a certain health percentage, which was 50% health, your haste or crit was increased by 8%. They've changed that now to when you're above 70% health. So you need to be a little bit more higher health. They've also added some like procs per minute to some of the other stuff. So, it's just a tuning pass.
Yeah. A lot of general like tuning down the effects that were obviously too good, fixing the ones that were scaling with key level instead of scaling with players, and generally making it so it's less insane.
Yeah, exactly. So that was that's the tuning pass there. And then Blizzard also clarified, or sort of we got sort of the or sorry, not clarify, but they added on to the PTR all the BOEs for the raid. And basically started going along with what was said in the Morgan Day interview. There's basically two BOEs per armor class, and no jewelry is a BOE. So basically, you'll have two cloth BOEs, two leather, two mail, two plate. They're not all the same slot either. They sort of jump between legs, wrist, waist, right, and hands, depending on the armor type. But sort of just streamlining it, only two BOEs per armor class are available, which probably makes, I guess it depends, right? Like, I think they said they're also going to drop less often, which means it doesn't really change the fact that they're not going to be super expensive. And the ones that drop with tertiaries, or if they can't even drop with tertiaries, or however they end up
still drop with tertiaries in sockets.
Yeah.
It's all right. So one of the things I liked about this patch is that I was able to get a BOE ring with perfect stats.
Just pay the gold.
And just never replace it. I didn't even get it with gold. We just had like five BOE rings drop one night in raid.
Oh, really?
Jesus. Just like we cleared the trash from Shriek Wing towards the Artificer Sun King Wing and just got showered with rings.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
And so I picked one up there, and that was really nice to have that. But at the same time, this is definitely better because my gear is still a hodgepodge of, it's no longer PvP gear finally, because I didn't actually go for the high enough rating to get 226.
Yeah.
I just got 220s. So I finally replaced the last piece of PvP gear.
Nice, nice.
But for most of the patch, it was PvP gear plus BOEs. It was basically all of my gear.
Oh, nice.
And nice. I would rather not have the situation be, you know, okay, go buy four BOEs, especially given that I play on a relatively low pop realm.
That's gonna be tough, yeah.
You can't get them.
Yeah. Yeah, the realm disparity, I think, is the biggest thing, where even on Mal'Ganis, where I play, like, which is a fairly high population server, like, stuff's still super expensive. Like,
I wonder, so one of my previous guildies created the WoW pay to win site for corruption BOEs.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's been updated. I'm actually going to go look now.
To check the auction house for like certain BOEs? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if, does it show? It is updated.
Oh, oh, nice. Look at that.
So, yeah. It is updated.
Nice, nice, nice.
So I don't know. That was something that was fun. Is fun. being able to fill out your gear pretty easily with BOEs, but I'm glad it's gone, honestly.
Yeah.
Or much reduced. These BOEs are not even, they are all crit mastery, heavy crit plus mastery. So I don't know how that fares for Windwalker. They're all right for Brewmaster, but not going to be your best. But you will happily equip one if you get one early.
Yeah, I think similarly, Mistweaver, I haven't gone over all the gear yet that drops in the raid, but they'll probably be decent at crit mastery, particularly with some of the mastery changes we got. So, to your point, if you see one drop, you might pick it up, hold on to it, or at least equip it and wear it to get something better, at least in the interim, particularly on Mythic, right? Depending on what slot, how the slots play out. Like, if you have final end boss gear, probably equip the BOEs right early. Solid change, I guess. I mean, to be fair, BOEs don't ever really affect like me, to be honest with you. So I think I've sought after like maybe one in the past, like probably, you know, two expansions. So
I did go and I bought a BOE this tier. Like, I got the ring from raid. Yeah. And I bought, I think I got the cloak from raid too, and I think I bought one more BOE because it was all crit verse gear.
Yeah.
And that's my best stats. So I bought one because like it's best. Why would I not?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nice, nice, nice. All righty. Well, I think that sort of wraps up the week in review, at least for WoW. And now we can get into sort of our main topic of the day, which is basically everything that's not World of Warcraft, right? So you and I both talked about this. It was like sort of a content drought, you know, it just in general, right? Like, we've sort of exhausted everything we can. I mean, I'm honestly raid logging at this point. Like I log in for raid once a week now. Play for basically, 3.5-4 hours and that's it. So
basically everybody in my guild is in the same boat. We are still on 2 raid nights. But the second raid night, like tonight, we're gonna be in there for like an hour and a half. Yeah. So we're gonna be in and out, moving on with our lives. And the only other time I actually log into retail is Tuesday morning to pick up my box.
Yeah. I do one key a week with a friend, and that's the other time I play. So like Wednesday is like key night.
I do need to get a key on my warrior just to like continue the gear trickle so it's not dramatically undergeared when the next patch hits.
Yeah.
But in the future, that's going to be me getting three boss kills in Mythic on that character. I just didn't do that this week.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just been not a lot of like actual WoW playing. But there's been, I've definitely played some other games, right? Been playing some other stuff. So we thought, why don't we take an episode, talk about maybe what else we play, what else we sort of are into, and then and sort of just fill up the time with that, I guess, is the way it goes. So I guess I'll turn it over to you, since this is really ultimately your idea. What have you been playing, or what are you playing now in the little drought we have?
Yeah. So I've been playing a bunch of different things, but most recently, as in like 5 minutes before we started recording this episode, I was playing Darkest Dungeon.
Okay.
That back up. I have owned that game since I think I had it at the very tail end of early access. It was given to me and I have yet to actually beat it. So I decided, you know, I'm going to pick it up and I'm going to beat it. Gildy was like, oh, mentioned it this weekend about how they were playing it. I was like, oh, you know what? I got really close. So you have to do these 3 missions at the end and they're very difficult. And I had done one of them.
Okay.
And hadn't done the other 2. So I got the second of the 3 done yesterday. And I'm doing prep stuff basically to do the third of the 3 in the next couple of days so I can actually beat the game.
Nice. So Darkest Dungeon is it like a rogue light like card game kind of, or are there cards? Okay.
No, you're thinking of something else.
Okay.
So it is a little bit in the roguelite, but it's not in the traditional roguelite space where like you die and you restart.
Okay.
It's really closer to something like a 2D XCOM kind of thing. Where, if you played one of the recent XCOM games, you know, they're squad-based tactical RPGs, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's another game I've been playing recently, actually, is XCOM 2. And one of the facets of that game that is very interesting is that your troops die. And when they die, they're actually gone. They're dead. They're like...
Gotcha.
If you have a soldier die, they are gone. And so Darkest Dungeon has that, and it instead of like XCOM being more like futuristic sci-fi stuff,
mm-hmm.
Darkest Dungeon is more fantasy, eldritch horror kind of thing.
Gotcha. Okay.
So yeah, I've been, and so another difference is like XCOM has like a failure condition where if you fall too far behind, you will ultimately just lose your campaign. Gotcha. Darkest Dungeon doesn't really have like a hard failure like that. The worst, like if you lose all of the recruits that you have, you can always get more. And gotcha. It will just take you longer.
Except like, I'm assuming there's some sort of like level up. Okay. Yeah. Level up training. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. So to be fair, I have a couple of friends who have played a lot of Darkest Dungeon. I have never actually played it. Just because I don't... The XCOM, like if it's sort of like a 2D XCOM, I might give it a shot. I just, for whatever reason, I thought it was more like card based, but maybe I'm mixing that.
I think you're getting it mixed up with another game from that time period that came out around the same time.
Slay the Spire. I might be confusing it with that. Okay, fair enough. Oh, that's cool. That's a very, very slow paced game.
I've been doing that. I've actually been, forgot to cancel my Audible account after I moved last summer because like I had subscribed to get the 1 token to get a book to listen to on the trip. And I forgot to cancel it. So I had like a year's worth of credits to spend. So I spent a bunch of the credits and then canceled my account. So I've been listening to books while I've been playing,
while you're playing
and other things.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, no, yeah. That's all. Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, I've never played it, but it's always looked interesting. But maybe not my type of game. I don't know. A little too, I think, methodical.
At the time I started, there was only one difficulty. And that one difficulty is very grindy and long. And I think the typical campaign completion time for that is like 80 hours or something.
Jesus. Okay.
So they added later on more difficulties, including a setting that basically cuts the campaign time down dramatically. So that it's less grindy.
Gotcha.
And so that's like, I am on that original difficulty because I have a fully upgraded town. I've got everything. I am not starting over. That's hilarious. I'm doing it on this one, which does mean that like when I try and do one of those missions and I bomb it and I lose all of my troops from it, I have to like start grinding up the troops from the ground floor.
Sounds awful. That sounds awful.
It's chill though. I like
it. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a very like slow paced game. Very different than what I've been playing. I'll tell you that.
Okay. Like, what have you been playing?
The polar opposite. So I've been playing a lot of Rocket League.
Okay.
And Battlefield 5 actually. So, Rocket League has been a game that it's been my like, hey, I have 20 minutes to do something. Let me play a couple Rocket League games. So it's a lot of fun. Drop in. I spent more money in Rocket League than any other game at this point. It's been real bad. I don't know if I ever mentioned on the podcast.
But I have a friend that has about $1,000 in league skins, so
probably have close to that, if not maybe a little bit more, just in terms of like Rocket League stuff. So yeah, so we're playing a lot of that. It's just a fun, like really laid back game. I don't know, you're a rocket powered basically RC car and you're trying to score in goals in a soccer net, and it's like 3v3. It's a ton of fun. So we've been playing a lot of that, and then playing a lot of Battlefield 5, which is weird because like my friends and I like jump kind of from game to game a little bit, and Battlefield sort of came out of nowhere. Like one of my friends has like the Xbox Game Pass, and like that gave you EA Play, or gives you EA Play now, and Battlefield 5 was free on EA Play. So we sort of like jumped through like the hoops. A bunch of people picked it up. Just been playing a lot of Battlefield 5, which is like just the most ridiculous stuff happens. Like you just watch like planes like crash into things. Like there's like boats. Like the other night I was on the beach and there was like a beach assault map, and I was on one of these massive cannons and I fired it like this troop carrier and I hit it and like it exploded, and like you could see the people's like bodies ragdoll, like the other players ragdoll out of it, dude. It was crazy. Like, yeah, there's just that game's a lot of fun just for like the ridiculousness of a lot of the situations you put yourself in. And then like even when we play, like we played one match against like a cheater, and it's a match where it's a map where like there's a big bridge over the center of it, and you can fight along the bridge, so it's up high, but then there's like a couple of different control points lower down, right? Like a town or whatever. And like we would just be walking and I'd die to getting headshot through a bunch of trees by this guy just sitting on the bridge. And then like I'd like hit tab. And I was like, damn, that's a really nice shot. I was like, how do you even see me? And I open up the thing and he's something like 89-2, like 89 kills, 2 deaths. And I'm just like literally just standing up this bridge, just like firing down at people. Like, of course you're cheating. And then like, so it's just like even at that point, like, I don't know. I just play games that I don't generally get mad at. So I've been playing a lot of those two games. So
yeah. Darkest Dungeon, maybe not the game you should play then.
Yeah, no. I was I started playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla earlier this week, just because it was on sale. And I was like, I played a bunch of Assassin's Creed games. I'm good at this game. They're like, what difficulty do you want to play on? I was like, well, not the hardest one, but like the one just below that, right? Above default, you know, more, you know, you want a little challenge. I died literally for 2 hours in the first boss. I almost threw my controller at one point, and it was like, oh God, I was so pissed. So yeah, I don't
know. So, kind of in that vein, The Witcher 3. I have not been playing that very recently, but I was playing that earlier this year. So I foolishly put it on the hardest difficulty. And by the time I reached the point that I was like, you know, this isn't actually fun anymore, I was like most of the way through the game. And I was like, well, I can't stop now.
No, you can. 100%.
You can. I did beat it on the hardest difficulty, but some games really don't work well when you turn up their difficulty because they just aren't tuned well for it. Like, shooters, I think, are typically very good about having good tuning on higher difficulties.
Yeah.
It depends. It varies from shooter to shooter. Some of them, they just have the AI basically headshot you all the time.
Yeah.
Which is no bueno. But something like The Witcher, basically everything just became a huge health sponge. And I very distinctly remember there was this point in the game where I needed to kill a werewolf. And just to kill it, I just sat there hitting it with my sword and casting whatever the fire spell on it to keep it from regenerating over and over and over for almost 10 minutes.
That sounds awful.
I ever failed a dodge, it would basically one-shot me.
Yeah.
Because I had to spend all of my, like, I don't even remember the resource names, but like the what you use to cast spells, I had to use it all on casting the fire spell in order to keep it from regenerating, so I couldn't use a shield.
God. Yeah. Yeah, that's what, like, the first boss I kept dying on was basically, like, if I attacked him, he did, like, a quick counter, but sometimes it was after the second time I hit, sometimes after the third, so I never could time it right, and the counter one-shot me. Like, he would just counter hit me, tap me once, and I died. So it literally became, the way I beat it was, like, I'd hit once, back out, dodge his strong attack, hit once, back out, dodge, like, and so it was like, it became, yeah, just unfun in terms of like the fights. I think game wise, yeah, it's been a lot of, you know, Battlefield, Rocket League, a little bit Assassin's Creed lately. So it's been a nice little break from WoW. I play I don't play other MMOs or other RPGs generally. Yeah. Like WoW fills that sort of, you know, you have to invest hundreds of hours and like continually invest that time, right? Because like, like a game like Assassin's Creed can be deep. Like I played when they rebooted it two before this. So with Origins, I put probably 200 hours in that game, 250 hours, right? And so it's super deep. There's a lot to do, but like a lot of those hours were spent like going to a town and like finding three things at the town and then like killing the main guy and like nothing to do with the story. It was just like mindless, like checking things off a list type activities,
right?
Which like I'm fine with, but like actual driven stuff where I have to like remember characters to like care a little bit about it, which I don't even do it WoW, but like to even do that again to enjoy a game just sounds like too much. So yeah, I was gonna say I almost picked up the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, but then I realized like it's a waste of money.
I picked that up because I've never played Mass Effect.
Okay.
I picked it up. I installed it. I have yet to turn it on.
So I've played probably 3 or 4 hours of Mass Effect 1. That's the extent of my Mass Effectness. Like I made it through the first mission and made it back to like I think the main city, and that's about it. So I have zero. Like people love that game, but it was, I don't know if I talked to you about this, but I was talking to my friends about it because one of them was really big into it, and I was like, what was I doing when this game came out? Because like I would have loved to play this, you know, it was a couple years ago. It was like 2006 or 7 or something like that it came out. And I was like, oh yeah, I was playing Burning Crusade for like every minute of every day. Like I didn't play any other games back then. So
speaking of, that is actually most of the reason why I haven't fired up Mass Effect yet is I have been playing the Burning Crusade.
That's true. You've been leveling, right? You have your Blood Elf Rogue.
All the way up to level 39 now. Getting there, slow but sure. Nice. And there are some things that I had forgotten were in like the BC leveling experience that were not in the vanilla one. Notably, there's an entire extra town in Dustwallow Marsh.
Oh,
with like
that's
a
right.
whole bunch of quests.
That's right. They added that. Yeah.
So like I did that on my rogue on BC. I was like, that was actually really great XP. Like the quests were well laid out. And it's in this part of the zone that when I was leveling my druid in classic, I just didn't go to.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, you know, I'll run my druid over here on classic era, and I'll go and do these because that'll get me. I just need like a couple more levels.
Yeah.
To get out of this like stall that it's in and get into the next phase of quests, basically. There's not a town there.
It doesn't exist.
There's not a town gosh. There.
That's funny.
It's just dragons.
That's awesome. Yeah, I guess they did. They added a couple of things with BC to the old world, but yeah.
So that was actually part of the patch 2.3 back in the day is when they did the XP decrease for levels 1 through 60.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that, they added a couple of towns to the old world to improve the questing. And there's a few things like I noticed while leveling, there are a bunch of Blood Elf related quests scattered throughout things. Like in Thousand Needles, there's a quest chain that's given to you that's like Blood Elf quest chain. There's one in, I think there's one in Tarn Mill. There's one in Hammerfall. There's like just a bunch of like random one-off quest chains. And then just adding like 5 quests to his own, you know, dramatically improves it because 5 quests here, 5 quests there, suddenly you're getting through that 35 to 45 like quest lull without any issues.
Yeah, it smooths out that area of it. Nice, nice.
I also did not make the mistake. I actually went to Stranglethorn Vale this time.
Nice, good. Good choice.
Gosh,
that place. Ugh. Yeah, I've been playing a little bit of Burning Crusade. I think I'm level 62 or 63, but I've been leveling with a buddy. So like, unless our schedules align, like,
yeah,
that's when we play. Anywhere. So it's like I think we get like maybe like two nights a weekend for a couple hours, like 2-3 hours. So it's slow going, but I mean it's funny, like BC. It's so different than like the retail game, and it's I don't know if I like it better or worse. Like the more I think about it, the more I'm like, it's at that point in my life, I would think I was fine playing one game forever. Like now there's like a lot of stuff that comes out that I'm like, oh man, like I really want to try and play this game. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like with BC or the way they used to do it, you'd be like, well, you'd be screwed if you played anything else just because of the time commitment. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that's correct if the reason that you're playing Burning Crusade is endgame stuff, because it is a huge time sink just to reach the endgame.
Yeah.
If you're approaching it, like, I'm not approaching it with the intent of doing endgame stuff. Like, I will probably hit level 70 before the Wrath Classic comes out. And yeah. I'll do heroic dungeons. I'll probably get into a Kara group. But I'm just leveling, man.
Nice,
That's the part of the game that I'm interested in, and I can drop in, drop out of that part anytime I want.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the, yeah. So, I've been sort of thinking about, like, do I actually enjoy this? Like, or is it just because, like, the friend I'm doing it with, like, we leveled partway originally in BC together. So, it's like sort of remembering some stuff, but there's some just bad. Like just awful quests, man. Like the kill quests to get drops are just annoying.
So this is another game that I've been listening to books while I've been playing it.
I can imagine that.
Like I took some time. I was like level 28, and I just did an entire level by killing farmers in Hillsbrad for wool, and herbing. In order to buy my mount at level 30, which turns out I didn't need to do that. I just needed to spend like 30 minutes gathering Swift Thistle so I can make swiftness potions, and I could have easily afforded it. But I didn't know that at the time. But wool cloth sells extremely well on Herod, so I was just gathering wool. So I was just like, you know, I can do this later or I can do this now. And so I just did it while I still gave XP.
That's funny. That's nice. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a different experience playing BC than I think anything else. But I like the nature of the game. Like as I wish, I don't know how to say this, but like, I like WoW now in certain aspects and I like it less than others. And I think it's like the class design and a lot of the choices they're making is annoying, but like the fact that I can drop in and drop out is very nice, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Which you can't do like with BC or some of the like the older MMOs. So,
yeah. Kind of in that same vein, I've been playing Morrowind off on and off this year as well.
Okay.
Which, for those that maybe aren't familiar with it, that is the Elder Scrolls 3. So the precursor to Oblivion, which is the one that I think was a lot of people's first exposure to the Elder Scrolls. And that is another game from a very different era.
Yeah.
So like one of the most frustrating things in Classic is you know, I'm on my rogue and I'm squishy, things hurt, but I can kill things pretty good. Yeah. And so the only small wrinkle is when you go eviscerate parry, eviscerate dodge, eviscerate miss. Eviscerate parry, and then you die to this random mob that you just like killed four or five of in a row without stopping for a break.
Yeah,
because you just your eviscerate went through.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's so sorry. Morrowind has that same thing where like you can hit things and you have to like aim at them to hit them, but random rolls determine whether you actually hit or not.
Oh god.
So it's very easy to just like be swinging at something with your sword, like everything's a hit, but nothing's actually hitting. And that's one thing that can stay in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of that RNG stuff. Yeah. It just seems, I mean, I guess it takes a specific game and you have to be set up for it, but yeah, that would frustrate the hell out of me.
Like I actually don't mind it too much in BC. Because the miss rate, the parry rate, all of that is not too low. And usually when you are dying as a result of that stuff, you really are like kind of underleveled for the thing you're doing because the parry rates and everything go up.
Right.
With the level difference between you and your opponent.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Or you pull it like low health and you like maybe one mob, like particularly I'm playing enhancement, right? As a shaman. So like there are some mobs where it's just like Wind Fury, Wind Fury, Wind Fury, and it's dead in 5 seconds. And there's other mobs where it's like just a long slog, right? And like I might pull something at half health and be perfectly fine because I get procs, or I don't pull things or I don't get those procs and I end up just slowly dying, right? Or needing to heal or doing any number of those things. So so
kind of in that vein, it's actually very interesting how much I've been actually like thinking about and engaging with the old talent system. So
I actually like it.
I like it a lot. I had forgotten how much, and like some of it is actually Druid has very boring talents, okay? In Classic, they're not very interesting or compelling. There's a lot of like, X does more damage, Y does more damage. It's like, great, it does more damage. Yeah. Rogue has a lot of really interesting ones where like, I went down the subtlety tree because it gets Shadow Step at the end and I want Shadow Step. Right. But along the way, there's stuff like you get Ghostly Strike, which increases your dodge chance. And it's like, in a PvE scenario, you're never going to use that because you don't need to dodge things.
Yeah.
Or in a raid scenario, you're never going to use that. But while you're leveling, that's actually fantastic.
Beautiful, yeah.
And then there's another one later on that, you know, you put 3 points in it, and every time you dodge, you have a like 50% chance to get a combo point.
So you pair them up, yeah.
And so you start like building up that, and then you can spec into higher dodge chance and stuff like that, and just like, it's not very reliable, but you know, sometimes I pull a mob and I ambush and I've got a chance to get an extra combo point when I ambush things. And so sometimes I like ambush them and I have 5 combo points.
Yeah, just right back. Yeah. 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 I mean, it's the old trees. I enjoy the old trees a lot because it's the same reason I enjoyed Legion Artifacts also, is that it's like you put points into something. So you have like some visceral, maybe visceral is a very strong word to use there, but you have like a feeling when you're like clicking the button to like place your point in certain areas. And like maybe you are following a guide. So like you already know where your points are going. There's really no thought that you personally are putting into it, but you still get to like click them. And it's still fun to do that. Like, it's fun to like click them a couple times, like watch your mana go up, or like watch maybe like your, I don't know, like your damage go up or your totems become stronger, right? Like things like that, or like the range increase. So
it is, I mean, like I spent probably 7 talents increasing the crit chance of ambush over a couple of different, over a couple different, you know, talent rows. And so now my ambushes crit way more reliably, and that's very visible and noticeable and fun.
Yeah. Versus like baking it into like an aura, or like, oh, you got a couple more gear pieces, like, so then you get it, right? Like, it's almost like, hey, I get to visibly increase my power as I click it. Yeah. I mean, I definitely miss that. I mean, I think I've talked about that, and I may haven't talked about it, but it is something that I do miss about the old game, is the old talent trees, even though they were, to your point, boring. Like, some trees were just like,
yeah,
do more damage for 5 more points, right? And but it's cool when you get to actually click the buttons and do that versus Blizzard baking into the spell, right? Making sure, like, relying on Blizzard. I mean, you're relying on Blizzard to do balancing in either case, but they give you some like external thing where you're like, yeah, I can tweak the knob here, even though the knob might not do anything.
And like I mentioned previously, I've been playing without a quest helper. I've also been very deliberate about not looking at any guides. The exception being secondary professions. I am 100% looking up that cooking guide to figure out where the fuck you buy the or like what quest you got to do to get 300 cooking, because god damn it, I'm stuck at 225. So I have no idea if any of these talents are useful in the end game at all. Like, some of them obviously aren't. All the ones that like trigger on dodges and give you extra dodge chance, like there's maybe one fight that people dodge tank on a rogue for memes in end game BC content. It's not a thing. So I know a bunch of those are bad, but it doesn't matter. Like, they're actually pretty nice right now while I'm, you know, level 39.
Yeah, we're having a good time. Yeah.
That's how I'm approaching the game, and I'm having a good time with it. That's actually kind of in that same vein. Like, Morrowind is lacking the modern niceties of things like fast travel and quest markers. Like, if you want to find something, you have to like pull up your journal, like a literal journal in game, which has one of the worst interfaces. Okay, I figured out how to use it. I did not know how to use it when I first was playing it as a kid, so I had no idea things were as a kid.
That's awesome.
But you know, pull up the journal, go cross-reference it with the map, kind of guess, and sometimes you get it wrong. And sometimes you get it very wrong and you end up on the wrong end of the continent doing God knows what.
That's hilarious. Yeah. That's an interesting way to play. I am 100% not doing that.
Yeah.
Well, I read a guide. I have Questy helping me out, pointing me in the right direction. You know what I mean? So I did it that way. But no, I mean, I think it's like, those are the parts of the old game I enjoy. Like, the parts I don't enjoy are, you know, the drop rates for things, like the time it takes to level, which is just like, it's crazy that I've probably put close to, you know, probably 12 to 14 hours into leveling, and I'm only 62, right? Or almost 63, right around that area. So, but it was awesome. I got Water Shield at 61, because now I don't have mana problems anymore. So it's like, I don't know. It's just like this back and forth thing where like, there's got to be a way to balance the game, at least an MMO, right, where it's like you have like the commitment and like the struggle is appropriate for the reward. Because right now, like, that's the one thing about BC that I think I enjoy, is that there's like a struggle with it. There's like a, I have to put in the time. I can't just click a flight point, fly to some marker somewhere, drop down, do something for 5 minutes and leave with some reward that I'm only doing because like I have to, or I don't get to raid, right? Like, With BC, I think it's more like, I know I am going on this journey of like getting this stuff, and I might not get what I want at the end, right? I might not finish this, I might fail, but like, it's that sort of like, hey, I went on this journey and I put some time into it, and maybe I get something out of it, maybe I don't, but I realize it's not going to be a like an instant win, which I think is something I enjoy in terms of the old game.
I really wonder, and I don't think there's any way for us as players to know this. Like, we know sub numbers from back in the day, but we don't know any breakdowns really beyond that. I wonder what the breakdown of players in like BC and the peak where things were during Wrath, of like people doing end game content versus people that were just like leveling.
Yeah, I don't, it'd be very interesting. It'd also be interesting too to see like end game content, like the number of folks raiding and maybe doing like high level PvP, and people who just like enjoyed crafting or like enjoyed collecting, right? Because yeah. I think that's the part of the game that like even right now, like I'm excited because I'm like looking at guides, of course, but I'm like, some of my like best gear, even like in phase one, right, comes from leatherworking. So I'm like, I'm gonna have to get I started like skinning already. So I'm like, I have some early like level skins that I have to get like to use to get my skinning up. So then I can use like the BC stuff. And it's like,
yeah,
when I get to max level, I know I'm gonna have to sit for like a couple hours over a couple play sessions just collecting mats because I'm gonna be cheap and not buy it, right? Like I'm not
So I mean, that's actually kind of the same thing. So I've been leveling professions as I go. I think the only profession I'm really behind on right now is fishing. Fishing, I'm only at fishing 100. But yeah. I have the cooking quest to unlock 300 cooking that is like a level 40 something quest, and I'm level 39 and I got it at level 35. And you can't get it until you're maxed in the previous level. So you, but I've been, you know, alchemy, herbalism, which alchemy low key, one of the most fun professions while you're leveling.
Oh yeah, I bet.
You get all of the potions, you get Invispots, which even as a rogue are like rogue stealth in BC is worse than rogue stealth is now.
Mm-hmm.
Rogue stealth now is functionally invisibility. Like it's not perfect, but it's like pretty close.
Yeah.
It was not that in BC. So like having Invispots is actually kind of nice.
That's awesome.
So there's a bunch of like random potions and flasks and things that are just nice to have. And that's not something that you get right now. So
yeah,
in retail.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, it's, I think professions are cool. There's a lot of parts of the game that are interesting, and maybe we'll see what Blizzard does in the future, but it feels like they've built a game. I know we've talked about this a little bit, but they built a game that you can like play seasonally, right? Like you can pick up the patch for 3 months. Basically, I think what they've done is they basically built a 3-month cycle, right? Where if you're the type of player that's not going to sort of try and collect everything or really raid in Mythic Plus, you basically have like 3 months worth of stuff to do. And then you drop off and you can come back for the next patch, go on the next roller coaster, right? Yeah. Whatever it ends up being, or amusement park ride, right?
And even if you do Mythic Plus and raiding, there's a lot of people that do manage to clear Heroic and get their Keystone Master in that 3-month period.
Yeah.
Like if you're not doing Mythic raiding, like there's a very interesting curve of raiders who like finish their stuff in 3 months. There's the heroic raiders, and then there's all the like mythic raiders, CE raiders, and then there's the world first raiders.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so it's it'll be interesting, but yeah, BC's been fun sort of meddling through that. So I think any other games that you've been playing?
I did want to bring up, I haven't actually been playing it very much, but I did want to bring up Final Fantasy. Okay. Because Final Fantasy 14 has actually been, I know I've mentioned it multiple times on this podcast because, I mean, it is a very nice contrast to World of Warcraft being the similarly positioned, same genre, a lot of similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And I've mostly brought it up in, as a way to like contrast and criticize World of Warcraft, because this is ultimately a World of Warcraft podcast, not a Final Fantasy podcast.
Right.
But over the past 1 to 2 weeks, it's really like broken out in, I think, the broader WoW mindshare. Yeah. Bellular's got videos on it now. There's been multiple posts about it on r/WoW. There was a meta post on the Final Fantasy Reddit about, can we please, for the love of God, stop with the World of Warcraft sucks posts that are from, you know, former/current World of Warcraft players coming in like, you know,
this is great.
Big eyes like, oh my God, this is new and exciting. I did want to like mention it a little bit because I have actually, like I said, basically brought it up exclusively as a means to like criticize certain aspects of WoW.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of people that I think kind of the demographics for our podcast skew towards the high-end PvE, you know, mid to high-end PvE players, or people that aspire to be that. And I think there's a lot of people that are going to try Final Fantasy and they're going to try and play it like World of Warcraft, and they're going to be extremely disappointed because the game doesn't support that.
Gotcha. So there, so when you say that, you're, what you're saying is there's not a robust like end game.
There is. Systems. But... And I think it's a lot. So I think we were actually discussing this in Brew Lounge recently as well. Some of the things that I think Final Fantasy does better. One of which Peo mentioned as well is like Final Fantasy ultimately respects your time a lot more than World of Warcraft does. There's not all the daily stuff is optional. There's like some weekly stuff you can do, but you don't need to do it. And if you miss it or you don't finish it, it's whatever. And some of that's just the way that the content's tuned. It's like not necessary to do that stuff. But it is the raiding content, I would say, is like end of heroic, early mythic difficulty level, right? It's the kind of thing that you can pug. And it will usually be a time-consuming and sometimes frustrating experience to pug. But you can put together like a 10-man group or a 10-man guild kind of thing and, you know, have a good time doing that. It's never going to be as hard as something like Sired and Athreus. Even, I don't think, a lot of the ultimate fights, which I haven't done, full disclosure, I have not done those. I don't think those reach the level of a lot of end tier mythic bosses, but they might. So I mean, they are fucking long dances. So there is this, like, if you are primarily interested in raiding and also want to not do a lot of the ancillary stuff that WoW demands you to do if you want to mythic raid, then I think Final Fantasy will support that to a degree. But, you know, there's no mythic plus. There's not, like, if you try and play Final Fantasy as your one and only game and the only mode you are interested in participating in is endgame PvE content, you're going to very quickly realize that that's not something that is, like, if you're going to play Final Fantasy, like, you can do that and you can clear the raid and you can come back for the next patch and you can be ready to go. And that's kind of what I kind of mean when I say it respects your time as well, is like, you can do the part of the game that you want, unsub, and come back when there's more stuff for that part of the game. But it's not the same game. It's not the same game. And if you want to, if I think the way I see it is WoW much more, WoW has much better support of the competitive mindset. If you want to compete, there's all of, like, all of the rating stuff. You know, we have rankings, we have parses, and Final Fantasy, there's Final Fantasy logs or FF logs run by Kira, same as Warcraft logs. So that does exist, but nobody really, like, there's not this, like, you know, people talk about, there's no WoW prog for Final Fantasy. So that kind of thing. And like PvP is PvP, competitive PvP is a big thing in WoW. It's not a big thing in Final Fantasy. Their PvP is very casual and a lot of people really don't like it. And it's fine. You don't like it, you don't have to do it. So Final Fantasy, I don't think really supports the competitive mindset. If you want to compete, I think you will be frustrated by it. So I think there's actually going to be a influx of like the mid-core, like people who are competitively motivated and not actually really at the level of commitment to compete in WoW. That are going to try Final Fantasy. They're going to basically reach the peak of the game doing everything except maybe the ultimate fights. And just be like, okay, what do I do now? And like, I think that's, it's fine. Like, I've been playing it very casually. I just do the basically LFR mode, which is much better and much harder than WoW LFR. But even still, it's not that hard. So I've been playing it very casually, and like, if you play it as a casual game, I think you'll have a great time. But if you try and play it as a hardcore PvE game, you are going to be disappointed. Is basically my take on it.
And some of the videos too that I saw, so I watched the Bellular video, right, about some of what quote unquote Final Fantasy does better or whatever. And it's funny, a lot of it seemed like it was just new, but it's like when you come to a game that's been established that has a bunch of history, there's a lot to do in that game because it's been around for so long, right?
Right.
So a lot of he was talking about was like, oh, you can do old raids. And it's like, well, to be fair, you can do old raids in WoW, right? There's time walking, so they're not always available, but like you can go back and do old content. And like there's this, like you can do collection stuff. And I'm like, well, WoW has a huge collection system. And
yeah, I think actually this is a very interesting one. So one of the posts on r/WoW was talking about the collection system in WoW versus Final Fantasy, because Final Fantasy has some real rough edges when it comes to, if you are just a dedicated collector, I want to have 100% of everything. Yeah, Final Fantasy is going to be kind of frustrating because like their transmog system has limited space.
I think I read this, or maybe I heard this.
Yeah, it has limited space, so you don't just like unlock an appearance. You have to like take it and put it in the chest, and then you can use it over and over again. It doesn't take up bag space, but that chest has limited space. It's got like 100 slots for each different armor slot.
Gotcha.
So it is finite. It's got a lot. Like for most players, it's going to be plenty of space, but it is finite. As opposed to WoW, where like pets and toys and mounts and transmog all take up no space and you can just collect everything. Flip side, gear looks a lot better in Final Fantasy, I would say. There's a lot more. If you engage with the transmog game as like, I want to make something that looks interesting and unique and fun. Like I want to make something, a set of gear that will to me. And if that's how you play transmog, I think Final Fantasy does that better because there's just greater variety, which like WoW has thousands and tens of thousands of items, a lot of which have five pixel models from 2004.
For the past two expansions, the gear has sucked, like in terms of like its actual models. Like it's
We could talk about things as well. Like hunters have one good tier set, and it's the Nighthold set, and I will fight you.
The only class that actually ever got good tier sets was Warlock. Like tiers,
paladins have good tier sets too, and including their honorary tier set, the Trial of Valor tier set.
Oh yeah, the goal. Yeah,
that is actually a paladin set. It's just not class restricted.
That's fair. But yeah, no, I think it's funny that people have been making all these comparisons between the two games. So I've watched a couple of the videos. I've watched a lot of the counterpoints, and it seems like to your point, right? It's not a competitive. It seems like it's not a competitive game, but it's a game that, if you want to play an MMO casually, get into something new, like Final Fantasy is there for you. I think it actually has like a free trial, right? You can play like most of the game right now for free.
It does the same kind of thing. So WoW has this too, to a degree, where you can just create an account and play up to a level cap. And for WoW, it's level 20. For Final Fantasy, it's like level 60 or 70. And like, I think part of the reason that they do that is in Final Fantasy, like you could level other jobs, but it's all in the same character, right?
Yeah.
So you would actually not have other quests that you could do if you leveled one job with them.
Yeah, that's the other thing I heard too, is that like, while everything's on one character, it's like leveling them up becomes a little tedious because you can't just follow like the story with like your second job, right? Your second job, you have to do like the repeatable content to level it or something like that.
Which, I think mostly is fine because you can do your daily dungeons, basically your daily random dungeon, and level them pretty efficiently that way. If you just want to eventually have them leveled and don't care about having them leveled right now. Yep. But if you're the kind of person that wants to like sit down on the weekend and level an alt, it's a little bit more tedious and grindy than it would be in WoW.
Gotcha.
But then that also like downsides and advantages, right? Because like I have a almost full gear set for whenever I get white mage to level 80. Because it's just like you do a dungeon and the healer in your group doesn't need the gear, and so you pick it up. And so when I hit 80 on white mage, I'll have a full gear set.
That's nice. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I might, like I said, I think I've dabbled in Final Fantasy a little bit, maybe got to level like 15 or so.
Yeah.
So like not too much.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go back. I don't know.
Like I said, I think if people approach it as a more casual game, like if you think, I think probably the way that a lot of WoW players should approach it is more of like the casual 10-man raiding kind of experience from back in the day. Like if you were doing casual 10-man raiding in, you know, Cataclysm, or I think Wrath had 10-man towards the end, right? Yeah, ICC 10, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you were doing like casual 10 man stuff at, towards the end of Wrath, like I think that's the kind of experience that Final Fantasy really supports, where like the raids are 8 people. If you want to have like a consistent raid team, maybe you have 1 or 2 people in addition to like around, so that if someone has to miss that they can do it. But you know, if you approach it like that, I think you'll have a great time. But it is not something that if you're a hardcore Mythic Raider right now and you go to Final Fantasy and you try and play like a hardcore Mythic Raider in WoW, you're going to very quickly run into a situation where like the game just doesn't support that.
Gotcha. All right, well, that's, yeah, interesting. So yeah, I'm probably not checking it out, but that is, that was definitely in the new, or at least the WoW circles this week, was how amazing Final Fantasy was, which is,
and I think a lot of that does come from the fact that if you are a casual player right now and you want to play an MMO, in order, I would probably recommend Final Fantasy, mm-hmm. Burning Crusade Classic, WoW Classic, and then maybe Retail as like the bottom of those. Because I don't think Retail actually supports casual play very well. Like if you are a hardcore collector and you just want to collect everything, or you're a hardcore PvE-er, or you want to do endgame PvP, like those things are all reasonably well supported. But if you just want to like hop in and have a good time, I don't think that WoW actually supports that very well, with like the way that leveling is still in Retail pretty bad. There's not really like end game things to do casually.
Yeah.
It's like Burning Crusade is a better casual game. If you're not trying to do end game stuff, Burning Crusade is a better casual game because the leveling is actually a game.
Gotcha.
But I did want to mention one more thing about Final Fantasy, and that is that people talk about the 2.5 second GCD like it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
My experience with all the different jobs in Final Fantasy is limited. I've basically played Monk, which is actually the fastest job. It's got the lowest GCD because it got a bunch of free haste, basically. Gotcha. I played Warrior. And so, relatively, and I guess White Mage, but limited experience, it's not a big deal. Like, Warrior in Final Fantasy right now is faster than Protection Warrior in World of Warcraft.
Okay.
Despite the GCD.
Interesting.
And some of that only happens later, which I think is a lot of people's experience. Like the first, you know, 30 or 40 levels, you don't have very many off GCD buttons, so you are limited by that 2.5 second GCD. Towards the end, you have, you know, more stats on your gear, you get haste just like in WoW. You know, you start acquiring skill speed, is what they call it, skill speed and spell speed and all of that stuff. And then it starts getting faster, and you have your off GCD buttons at high levels. And so it gets a lot faster. But yeah, I mean, compared to like if you're used to playing a Windwalker Monk.
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't think there's anything in Final Fantasy that's as fast as Windwalker Monk. With the fixed 1 second GCD, and like you have something to press basically every GCD. But they get close. It's not a big deal.
That's cool. That's nice. Awesome. Well, one last question I had. I know it was on our list, but E3 is this week, or is the next like week and a half or so. Have you watched much of it or been paying attention at all?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well,
I have no idea.
It's funny. There's the new Battlefield comes out this year, so I'm very excited about that. Nice. And there's apparently a new CSO. Microsoft's event is today. I was like sort of checking Twitter. Apparently there's a new Sea of Thieves update, which if you ever played Sea of Thieves, it's basically to be a pirate, but it's like super casual.
It's like Valheim, but with pirates.
Less. So no. So it's more like, there's not really a game that's like it. I'm trying to think. It's like if Nintendo, which I guess Rare made this, so it makes sense, the Donkey Kong company. But yeah, it's like a very like casual game where you get a pirate ship and you can be pirates with your buddies. You can like go on quests to find buried treasure maybe attack other players. But it's like super casual.
Funny story on the subject of WoW players being unable to enjoy other games.
Yeah.
Sea of Thieves, I remember when that came out, and there were a bunch of people in my guild and in my friend group that were going and playing it. and we're trying to just like get, I don't know, get to the end game, like max everything out and just like
going so
not fast. Like they very rapidly were like, okay, well now what do I do? Like, yeah, now what? And it's like the game WoW is a very unique game. It is one of the only games that really supports that, like, hardcore, this is my life now
kind of
gameplay loop, where there's also hard content at that point. Because there's plenty of very grindy MMOs where, like, you can spend the rest of your life just grinding mobs and not finish it. But most of those don't have something like Mythic Raiding or high-end PvP that's actually, like, relatively balanced.
Yeah, no, Sea of Thieves is definitely a just chill game. You go on a little voyage, maybe pick up some pigs because the local merchant wants it. So you go to this island, you sail to the island, you pick up pigs, you sail back. It's fun. But yeah, there's apparently a new expansion. It's Pirates of the Caribbean themed. So like Captain Jack Sparrow is there and Davy Jones and all that type of stuff. So yeah, a couple interesting things coming out.
It's very interesting. Like Sea of Thieves is one of those games where it seems more like it's a toy for you to play with.
Oh yeah, the water looks so good.
More than something like a WoW expansion is like an experience that you're supposed to go through.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the experience, there's this end game stuff for you to that's supposed to challenge you and you're supposed to beat it.
Yeah.
That's not like if you think of like Legos, right? Legos are, I think, probably the quintessential toy of our generation. There's nothing challenging about Legos.
No.
They're not hard to use. They're, in fact, very easy to use. They don't give you any, like, they give you instructions, but, like, maybe you build the thing that the kid's supposed to be, and then you, like, 30 minutes later, you have to part into something totally different.
You know?
It's very much a toy for you to go and just do things with, and that's Sea of Thieves is like that. And I think when I mentioned Valheim, that's kind of how I think of Valheim, but that might just be because I've watched some of the like, look at this weird thing I can do in Valheim and never actually played Valheim. I have not
watched. Yeah, I would say so in that regard, yes, very similar. The difference is Valheim has like a little bit of progression and you can die and lose a bunch of progress or something. Like Sea of Thieves is generally just like you don't really there is a progress system, like there's where you, I don't get too into, there's like somewhat of a progress system where you're like gaining reputation with factions, but like you lose maybe like 5 or 10 minutes of your time when you die in Sea of Thieves, right? Versus like in Valheim, you can lose like hours and hours. Like if you die and like you drop all your gear on the ground and then like you're screwed. And you
die trying to get back to it.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. A little bit different.
Fond memories of playing Anarchy Online back in the day, being 90% of the way to another level. And then dying
over and over,
where you lost your XP. And like, if you were, so that game, you had the best way to level was to go into basically like a shared dungeon instance.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a bunch of players and like infamous, like train to zone kind of yells, that kind of thing. And so if you were getting towards the end of the level range for an area, you'd be very deep in the zone. And if you died and then your group disbanded, like you probably weren't getting anything. You weren't getting back.
Yeah. God. Missed those games.
No, it didn't. I don't think it actually had corpses that you could go and pick up to like regain your stuff. I think it was just like you lost the XP and it functioned as sort of like a pseudo rested system until you regained all of the XP that you lost.
Gotcha. But,
yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Oh man. All right. Well, I think that's it for the major topic. We only have a couple more minutes left here. So we're gonna have a couple
questions.
Yeah. So we are gonna skip over Lore Corner today, just because number one, I didn't really have a topic for Lore Corner. And number two, I want to do a little bit, it's kind of like we're waiting for like the final stories to come together on 9.1. Right. So
there was a Datamines cutscene from the Sylvanas fight this week.
There was only one. Exactly. Yeah. There was one with that. There was like they data mined some of the ending covenant cutscenes for the different covenants as you sort of end your time in the storyline. There was a weird cutscene where it's like called Anduin's Goodbye, where like it's him and Sylvanas and the player. So we don't know why they're there. So a bunch of stuff is sort of speculative right now. So when that's a little bit more concrete, we'll sort of probably talk a little bit more about that. But yep, Templeton's point, we did have two questions. And as always, my favorite section of the show. We're going to answer those questions. So you can always, you know, reach out to Emelson or myself. We'll answer your questions on air when you send them in. So these two come from Andrew today. And unfortunately, I'm going to, first of all, issue a public apology to Andrew. I was not ignoring you. I did that thing where like I get a ping from someone and I said, yep, I'll write this down in a minute. And then it clears the ping, you know, and I never go back.
Speaking of, I wonder, I had a question. I don't remember if it was last week or this week. And I'm not sure if I can even find it in my DMs now because I get so many DMs.
Well, while you're looking on that, I'll answer these two because these are coming from Andrew over the past couple of weeks. So first of all, sorry, I was not ignoring your messages or anything like that. I'm just an idiot and look at DMs, then never actually write things down. So Andrew's first question here is, disregarding which covenant is the strongest, he was asked, or they were asking, which covenant is your favorite for monk and why? He gives the example of like Necro for transmogs or Venthyr for the summons, the Ton of Adepts, etc. So I guess they're asking, you know, from a thematic perspective, what is your favorite covenant and why? Particularly looking at monks. So I guess I'll go first. So I would say that thematically, from a monk perspective, I really think probably Night Fae ends up being the best from a theme perspective, just because it's very chill, very calm. Like, I know that like chi and nature are kind of similar in terms of energies, right? So like the idea is like very one within themselves, very like sort of not very crazy, things like that. So I think Night Fae ends up being probably the best in terms of like a match if we're thinking theme wise. Venthyr, I think, is a little too dark, you know.
I don't think Venthyr makes much of any sense for the way that monks are in WoW.
Yeah. They're
in games that have greater flexibility on this front. I think any of them you could make work with a monk. Mm-hmm. I think with the way that monks are specifically in WoW, Night Fae is, and I think a lot of classes in WoW have this problem, where specifically Night Fae is the only one that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so using Kyrian as an example, Kyrian has this like, okay, serenity and control and order. And like, there's a lot of monk themes, broadly speaking, that lines up with. Very few of which actually show up in the World of Warcraft monks class.
Yeah.
Like, we even have, you know, the Brewmaster, which is in many ways the antithesis of, you know, order and control. And so Kyrian doesn't really fit, but it's not because Kyrian doesn't fit monks in general. It's because the themes of a WoW monk just don't work with the themes of Kyrian because they've never put them there.
Yeah.
And exactly. Some of it is like Windwalker doesn't have any themes at all. Windwalker is very like, I don't know, bland.
Yeah.
Whereas like Mistweaver has a stronger theme that is very like close in many ways to Restoration Druid.
Yeah.
And does fit with Night Fae very well. And then Brewmaster kind of doesn't fit with any of them. And to a degree, same thing with Windwalker, doesn't really fit with any of them. Definitely not Necrolord. Definitely not Venthyr. And I would say really not Kyrian, at least for Brewmaster, which just leaves Night Fae. And I would say like, as far as aesthetics, I don't like any of the transmog sets for the Covenants, just period. I don't like any of them.
Yeah.
For Monk. I do like them for other specs or for other classes, but I don't like the leather one, which means that that's a non-factor. And then the most fun ability to use is still Feyline Stomp, and it is the best looking by a country mile. So.
Okay. Yep. So I think you've got our sort of answer there in that, you know, it's Night Fae. So lines up pretty a-okay. All right, Andrew's second question then here is, they ask, based on the PTR stuff you've seen so far, which is your favorite fight and why? So I guess you've done most of the raid testing, so I'd probably turn to you, Emelson, to so what's your sort of favorite fight so far based on like the testing you've been able to do?
It's really hard to say.
Okay.
It's really because there are a couple of fights that spring to mind as like, I think this could be really fun. Mm-hmm. But they also have potential to be really, really painful in a Xanash kind of way. So something like Painsmith is very cool and unique and I like it, but it's very binary. What in the like one person making one mistake wipes the entire raid kind of way that Xanash did. And so if that's actually how it works, then I think it's going to be very frustrating and not very fun.
Gotcha.
Something like Guardian of the First Ones, I think, is another one that's like, it feels weird to pick like a patchwork one, but Sludge Fist is one of the most fun fights this tier. Sludge Fist is very good. Guardian of the First Ones, I think, has potential for that as well. They need to figure out what they're doing with the energy mechanic on Mythic so that it doesn't become like one person missing it wipes the entire raid because you cut 30 seconds off the enrage timer.
Yeah.
But that's another one I think could be a lot of fun. What else is there? I don't want to pick like one of the first three because I don't think any of them are particularly like fun.
Yeah.
They're fine, but they're not that interesting. Remnant of Ner'zhul, actually. This is my real answer. Remnant of Ner'zhul, if it works like it did on Mythic testing, which is no puddles on the dispel thing. And that means that like you do the knockbacks back and forth and you're like moving around the room to knock back so that you can point the tank cone in different directions. And like, that was actually a lot of fun. I really liked how Remnant of Ner'zhul worked on Mythic testing. And I hope that is how it works in practice.
Gotcha. Nice. Nice. Yeah. I think I'm kind of really excited about Kel'Thuzad. Not doing much of the testing, but just watching a lot of it. I think Kel'Thuzad or KT could be
fun. Yeah. I don't know how hyped to get to that for that one yet, because it has a lot of timer wonkiness.
Yeah.
For example, some of the things he does are determined by the amount of mana that he has. In the same way, actually, Remnant of Ner'zhul has the same problem. And his mana doesn't reset when he phases.
Yeah.
So if you phase at a different time, it changes things. It's nowhere near as bad as the old versions of Stone Legion Generals. Nowhere near that bad. Don't like, I say Stone Legion Generals, but really a better example is Zekul, which was a lot easier to control.
Yep.
And you planned around it and you stopped damage and you killed the boss. But that is something where like, I also, the groups that I was in, so when we did Kel'Thuzad and Mythic testing, we didn't have a full guild group to actually do it. Mm-hmm. So we didn't really get very far in Mythic testing. Heroic testing was kind of a mess. So I don't know. I don't feel like I got to experience enough of that to really say more. Gotcha. Also, kind of an annoying tank fight, which does skew my perspective. It's got the different tank adds that the DPS have to kill and you got to run around and collect, but it's also got the thing where like if your co-tank doesn't taunt during the cast of the thing that puts a 1500 percent damage amp on you, then you just die because you can cast a frostbolt right after and that frostbolt will not switch targets.
Gotcha. That's funny. Yeah. So, well, I mean, I guess, yeah, you get that, you get to skew it there, but yeah, I think for me, Kel'Thuzad, I think looks cool. The Remnant of Ner'zhul, the bouncing out of heroic testing, I think I'm just scarred by.
Heroic testing sucked. Mythic testing was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, but no, I think those two, I'm trying to remember. I think I said that Zymok was going to be my favorite fight in Nathria. And I think I still like that fight, but yeah, Kel'Thuzad for me here, I think. So, well, cool. Well, Anzaru, thank you for both your questions. Again, sorry I did not get these on the list. The last couple weeks, I am an idiot, is what I can say. So, I think that about wraps it up. Do you have any other final parting words, thoughts, anything like that?
No, it's been quiet. We still don't have a 9.1 release date, which
no,
is
we don't
to scare me.
We do have a Diablo 2 remastered release date, but ooh, that was just dropped. So
okay, when is that?
September 21st. Okay. Hold on, I think it just came out. Oh god. I was just looking at September 23rd. I'm sorry.
Okay.
September 23rd. So.
Yeah.
But yeah. But yeah, no 9.1 yet. So.
Well, that is going to be the end of our show today. Thank you all for listening. And if you enjoyed this podcast and you want to support it and all the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, you can do that in a couple of ways. You can support us on Patreon, of course, patreon.com/Peak of Serenity. You can also come and join the Peak of Serenity Discord, come and hang out in the lounge channels, help answer questions, have discussions about the different specs, all that kind of fun stuff. You can find the link for that on Wowhead. There's a link to all the class discords, as well as to on the Peak of Serenity website at peakofserenity.com. But that is our show for the day. Thank you for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks, because next week there will not be an episode.
We are off.
Bye.
Bye.
I am really, really curious about what's going to happen with the Sylvanas fight.
Yeah, it being like in the Sanctum, or in Orbos, I guess, not the Sanctum, but in Orbos. And yeah, yeah. What the outcome of her little fight with the old Yaler is, or with us and the Jailer and stuff like that.
I'm also curious what they're going to do on Mythic, because they've confirmed no Mythic phase, but like Denathrius didn't have a Mythic phase, but phase 2 and phase 3 were totally different ball games.
Right.
From Heroic, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Maybe it's something where like we go down and fight alongside of like Thrall and those guys with like Anduin at a certain part, right? Where like you have to split your raid up or something. And I don't know.
I was watching this is actually something we should get. I don't know if you watched the roundtable that Preach did with Limit, Echo, and Pieces.
I did not watch that, no.
Okay. So. I watched through it last night playing Darkest Dungeon. Spoiler, that's one of the games we're gonna talk about later.
Awesome.
But there's not... I don't think there is that much of, like, general interest. A lot of, like, here's this boss. How long do you think this is gonna take you to kill?
Yeah.
And, you know, there were like 6-1s, and then it goes like 30 to 50, 50 to 100, 100 to 200, 100 to 200. It's like,
yeah.
But one of the things that they mentioned is that on the final phase of the Sylvanas fight, there's a platform. Or I don't know, like the third phase, I don't remember. One of the phases has a platform where for each covenant, basically, like there's a platform with the mark of each covenant on it.
Yeah, like the final phase. Yeah, there's four. Yeah.
So they were like wildly speculating, throwing things out there, like, oh, maybe we need to have 5 of each covenant in the raid, which would be dumb as hell.
Be awesome. But
also, it would absolutely blow my mind if they get to Mythic. And they get all the way through the first 2 phases.
Yeah.
And they get into phase 3, and they realize, oh shit, we need 3 more Necrolords.
It's such a... Oh God.
It would be so dumb. And especially with Discrease looking like it might be moving off of Venthyr as well.
Yeah.
That could be... they could end up in a situation where, you know, 90% of the raid is Nightfae or Kyrian.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hilarious. God. Blizzrad. Yeah, I mean, or maybe, we could speculate too, but like they could do something like where it's like the platform where you have the most amount of your raid as that covenant, you gain some sort of like power, right? Like you...
Yeah.
Relative like the number of people that are on there, so like you have to think about who's in your raid, and like you go to like your weakest platform first, you know what I mean, to
sort of
like,
maybe,
well, I don't know, something like that. But
I hope they don't do anything with the covenants on that, but I thought it was a funny kind
that'd of be note. Hilarious, dude, that'd be so funny.
Oh man, funny for us, not for them.
No. We'll let them figure it out and then, you know, kill a couple.
Yeah, by the time, like, if there is something like that, by the time that we get to Sylvanas, yeah, we will have people prepped already to have the right covenants.
Exactly. Be easy mode.